Hello! Welcome to the Rotten Horror Picture Show, the horror movie podcast where we talk about films off the Rotten Tomatoes 200 Best Horror Films of All Time list. My name is Clay. With me, as always, is Amanda. How are you doing, Amanda?
I'm doing good, Clay, but have you ever thought about the fact that everything that happens to us in our lives is all part of death's sadistic design leading to the grave?
Oh, constantly. Yeah, that's good. The first thing that pops into my head every day when I wake up.
And last thing you think of at night.
Exactly. Yeah. Just in case, it's the last thing I think of at night. We are not doing a movie off of our list today because over on Patreon, where we are doing our sequel coverage, which you can follow along at patreon.com/thepenskyfile, we are covering for the month of April Final Destination 2.
Mm-hmm.
And since we had not watched the original, that's what we are doing today.
Welcome.
And we will just have dead air as we watch Final Destination. Final Destination from the year 2000. It is not on our list. It is number 51. Sorry. It has a 51% Rotten Tomatoes score and a 68% audience. I'm a little surprised that it's that low from the critics. Because, like, it's not Hamlet, but it's like, I feel like in the time that this came out, and even still, because there has now been six of them.
Yeah.
It is a remarkably original series.
Yeah. I do have vague memories of when this one came out, that the attitude was sort of, well, at least it's an interesting premise.
Yeah.
Right? Like, at least the gimmick was good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. That feels kind of right to me.
Yeah, I do think it is. As with a lot of, we have now done a number of horror franchises.
Yes, we have.
And I think one of the consistent things we've noticed is, well, with a couple exceptions, a lot of times the first one is a great proof of concept, and then they really kind of fine tune it in the next one. And I think that's kind of what happens in this series, because this movie has all of the bones of the Final Destination franchise, but I don't think it really lights up until part two.
Yeah.
I think there's a bit of a give and take there, because, well, we'll talk about that when we get to the second one. Anyway, I have also, full disclosure, now watched all of them. I watched between last night when we watched it and today when we're recording, I have now watched 3, 4, and 5.
Wow.
And I had seen 2 and I saw 6 recently. So
you have just mainlined all of the Final Destinations.
Yes. And I have a working knowledge of all of them, and I need this information to go somewhere. So buckle up.
So suddenly, all of our Patreon coverage for the next 6 months will be.
Yes. Had you seen this before?
Yes, I had.
Yeah.
Yeah, at least a couple times.
You didn't see it in the theater, did you?
No, I was 12.
When's that ever stopped you before?
I mean, you know, the law.
Did I see this in the theater? I don't think I saw this in the theater. 2000. Yeah, I honestly don't know. Like, I feel like it's a 50-50 shot that I either did or didn't see this in the theater.
Yeah, I don't really remember the first time I ever saw this. I feel like it was just one of those movies that got popular enough and was kind of around. I think a bunch of us watched it a few years back.
Yes.
As a group hang outside.
It's really starting to become depressing to me how much the concept of time just gets squished down as you age.
Yep.
Because when we were said, oh, we need to watch Final Destination 2, I was like, we just watched that. And that was at least multiple years ago.
Yeah.
2, if not more.
I would say closer probably to 3 or 4.
Yeah. I think it was probably shortly after the pandemic.
Yep.
When we were getting back together and doing outside movies again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, it's so weird.
Time is a mystery to man, Frylock. Yeah.
And talk about overly considering your own mortality.
Yeah.
But it's like,
this is what the Final Destination movies will do to you if you watch all of them in 24 hours.
I guess. Although, I do have to say, One of my favorite things about this franchise, having watched all of them, is so I have questions coming off of this movie.
Okay.
As to how certain things work. All of the other movies come up with different situations to put this concept like to the test. So like in two, I think two is pretty much, I think they add something, a bit of the lore towards the end in two.
Yeah.
But three, I'll say five because it's the most recent one I watched. I literally was thinking about this.
You sound like you have a mental crazy person board about these movies.
I kind of
like
do.
Red threads in my brain, going everywhere. Yeah.
So I'm watching five, right? Uh-huh. And you know, you start, it's like with the fifth one, you start thinking about this concept and you start going like, well, what if this? What? Mm-hmm. And one of the things I thought about was, well, what if somebody survives the thing, but like wasn't going to die anyway? Are you involved then? And so that actually happens in five. Is there's the group of kids.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, we're all going to die a certain order. And then they realize, oh, wait a minute. In my vision, I saved her. She didn't die.
Ah.
So what does that mean? And the answer is convoluted. But,
but gee, I'm shocked.
Certain stuff like that where it's like, well, what if you die and then like you come back to life?
Right.
You
know, yeah. Kind of stuff. What if you were medically dead?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's fun that they
actually address all the questions.
In Bloodlines, the most recent one, the setup, I think it's probably the most clever setup because it's the survivor of the initial thing. The initial thing happens in like the 60s. And after she survives, she continues to survive and ends up having a family.
Oh, wow.
And so after she eventually dies in the movie, that sets the dominoes off for the rest of her family, who should not be alive at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is pretty fun.
That is fun. I like it when if like you're going to do a franchise like that, that you're actually addressing some of the questions that people who watched the movies would have had.
Yeah. It's like what was really fun about the Highlander TV show is it was like every episode I feel like was started because two people were like, so if you're an immortal,
if you're the Highlander,
what happens if like a human kills you? Does your power just disappear? Does it go in? It's like, well, okay, let's do an episode about that. Anyway, I had seen this before.
Yes.
I don't remember when the first time was. Probably on video. This feels like a big video movie for me. But we're going to take a quick break, play the trailer, and I'm going to then condense four sequels into the knowledge of four sequels into the discussion of the original, skipping the second one.
This is going to go great.
Yes.
I got this feeling. This weird feeling.
How you doing?
The plane can explode!
It's not a joke! It's not a joke!
We get thrown off the plane all because Brownie has a bad dream?
I saw it.
The plane! It's gonna blow up! It's gonna blow up!
Because of you, I'm still alive.
We say that the hour of death cannot be forecast. But death could arrive this same afternoon.
Rift Time is just the first of us.
By walking off the plane, you're cheating death.
It's an accident.
In death, there are no accidents. And no escapes. You have to figure out how and when it's coming back at you.
This is a message or something, hinting at a design. We will die unless we find the patterns and cheat it again.
Death isn't done with us. I know who's next.
Nobody has control over life and death. Unless they are taking lives and causing death.
I won't let this happen. What are you, God now?
So who's next?
Okay, Final Destination from the year 2000. It only occurred to me just now that this probably wouldn't have come out if they made it like a year later.
No.
Because if this came out on, like, if they were making this movie when 9/11 happened, yeah, they probably don't put this out.
Yeah, no, I definitely have in my notes, like, wow, pre-9/11 airports.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. It didn't occur to me how close.
Yeah, it's very close. Are.
Yeah. Directed by James Wong, written by Glenn Morgan and James Wong, two buddies from the X-Files who wrote a lot of classic X-Files episodes, and Jeffrey Riddick, starring the guy from Idle Hands, the girl from Varsity Blues, a guy who was on Dawson's Creek, Stifler, the superfluous sister from Black Christmas 2006, Rob Zombie's Herman Munster, the girl from Saving Silverman, the pusher from the X-Files, and the great Tony Todd as Bloodworth.
Yes.
The mortician who seems to know a lot about what's going on. Amanda.
Yes, Clay.
What happens in Final Destination?
Embarking on a school trip to Paris, Alex Browning experiences a premonition. He sees the plane explode moments after leaving the ground. Insisting that everyone get off the plane, Alex and seven other people are forced to disembark. All watch as the plane actually explodes in a fireball. He and the other survivors have briefly cheated death, but will not be able to evade their fate for very long. One by one, these fugitives from fate fall victim to the Grim Reaper.
That's very in-depth for these.
I know.
It's usually either that or a bunch of kids don't die.
Right. Right. I do think a subtitle of this movie should have been A Teenage Boy Discovers Mortality.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Clay, some things you'll find in Final Destination the first include a French teacher who's really failing at his job.
He seems like a really bad French teacher.
Yeah.
Because none of those kids seem to know French.
No.
Except our Allie Larder. Yeah. And the only reason she knows French is to show that she's...
like a social outcast.
Yeah, and like an intellectual.
Yes, the weird one.
She's the
you
one.
You don't think that her reading Henry Miller's Tropic of Cancer supposed to denote that she's an intellectual?
I'm looking forward to talking a bit more about her because she is, how do you say, completely fictitious as far as...
I wish I knew it in French because I almost said, como se dice?
That reminds me of one of my favorite small... Mike Myers jokes where he says they have a certain I don't know what instead of je ne sais quoi. I'm looking forward to talking about her.
You'll also find shitting next to your best friend to the soothing sounds of John Denver.
Shit buddies. Yes.
Yeah. Or as Clay likes to call it, shit buddies.
I will say Todd, I do agree with his reasoning. I don't agree for the same reason. Because, you don't want to stink up the girls or whatever, but that's a long flight. And I try to do my best to never have to use a plane bathroom for any reason.
Oh, wow.
So I always fail. But, like, if I can avoid it, then I will.
I would be too dehydrated to live, so I don't care. You'll also find a really fucked up god.
Yeah, they really lay that one out at the beginning.
That's a really fucked up god to take down this plane.
Yeah, it did make me think about, the inherent supernatural battle going on behind the scenes here, which we'll talk about a little bit later.
Yes. Cheeky horror history character names.
Yes, the return of the characters named after horror movie creators.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Terry Chaney, named after Lon Chaney. Todd Wagner, named after director George Wagner. Alex Browning, after director Todd Browning. Mm. Larry Nobody in him is named Murnau anymore. Larry Murnau. after director F.W. Now, who directed Nosferatu. Agent Shrek, who after Max Shrek, who starred in Nosferatu. Blake Dreyer, after Carl Theodore Dreyer, who directed Vampire.
Oh.
Howard Siegel, after director Don Siegel, who directed Dirty Harry. Don Siegel's not really a...
Yeah.
Did he ever do a horror movie? There's a movie he did it's one of the more offbeat, early offbeat Clint Eastwood movies called The Beguiled.
No, I don't. I've never even heard
of this. It's pretty good. Huh. It's about Clint Eastwood plays a... Is he a Union soldier? It's during the Civil War.
Oh.
I think he's a Union soldier, an injured Union soldier, who ends up at this house, like plantation type house,
mm-hmm.
that is only women.
Mm.
And it's basically all about him sort of using his manliness.
Masculine wiles.
Masculine wiles. Yeah. I was trying to think of what the male version of feminine wiles was. Masculine wiles. To kind of manipulate these women.
Uh-huh.
And then eventually they start to go misery on him a little bit.
Nice.
It's pretty good. Sophia Coppola actually remade it a couple years ago.
Oh.
I think Nicole Kidman was in it.
Oh, that's why I think this concept sounds so familiar.
Yeah, which I wanted to see because I actually heard that was pretty good. Yeah. But anyway.
Your dog just hit my mic.
And Billy Hitchcock after Alfred Hitchcock, and yes. Valerie Lewton after horror producer Val Lewton.
All right. You'll also find Sentient Water.
Yeah. So as...
I feel like that's going to open a whole can of conversational worms.
As I said about the sequels kind of fine-tuning things, the first post-accident kill is Todd in the bathroom.
Yes.
And it is the only time that I can see, having now watched all of it, where there is a clear... supernatural hand on one of the inanimate objects that caused this death.
Yes.
Because the water comes out of the toilet, snakes out,
follows him around the room.
And then after he dies, it actually goes back up into the toilet.
Yes, yeah.
Which it never gets that sentient ever again.
No.
I do also like, however, that death kind of treats it like a mob hit and makes it look like a suicide.
Yeah. You'll also find a stealth bus.
Yeah, stealth bus.
Yeah.
It always works.
It's got to be one of those electric buses that's really quiet.
Yeah, they do that.
Sneaks up on you.
They also do that in part four, but it's a stealth ambulance.
Nice.
The irony of that.
Much like the stealth train in Duel.
Yeah, there's kind of a stealth. Is there a stealth? There might be another stealth car in four or maybe five. I can't remember.
Probably.
But it always gets me because it's like... In order for a person to get hit by a bus like that, every single other person would have been able to see that bus coming for a while.
Yes, or at least hear it and be like, hey, sounds like something's coming. You should get out of the road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, I think what it is really is touching on the filmmaking concept of that. Nothing exists outside the film.
How did you suddenly get dressed in tweed and an ascot?
I'm sorry. Are my leather patches coming off of my elbows?
Twirling a mustache and holding a cob pipe? What is going on around?
Yes. Don't ever ask me a question because you'll never leave and talk to anyone else at the party. I'm sorry. Did I say party? I meant coffee line.
You'll also find a kettle Amanda finds personally offensive.
Yes. Please explain.
It doesn't have an opening other than the spout.
Yeah.
It is solid. It is a solid metal dome with a solid bottom, and the only opening is the spout.
Yep.
So you don't know what the fuck is in that kettle.
Water for tea.
But what else? How many spiders do you think could crawl in there, Claire?
Yeah, they're all dead.
And then you're going to drink them?
Well, as long as they don't come, it's not just like pouring
if
spiders
you
out.
You were making tea. And you boiled water and then poured out a bunch of dead boiled spiders.
I would burn my house down.
Yeah.
What happens at the end of that scene, I would cause on purpose.
Yes. Yeah. You would stab yourself in the chest and then burn your own house.
I'm sure I've told this on some podcast before, but I used to have all my stuff in the basement. And there was one day where I went to use my printer and I turned my printer on and one of those giant centipedes, like house centipedes, came out of where the paper comes. And I was like, that's it.
Yeah. This house is done.
Done with this house.
You'll also find Clear's version of Kate's monologue from Gremlins.
Yeah. I didn't clock that until you said it, but it's very close to that. Yeah. I'm really curious about what her living situation. Does she have no parents?
I think the implication is that her mother has abandoned her.
Okay.
That her mother ran off with some shitty boyfriend.
Yeah.
And she has been abandoned. And she's just living on her own.
I mean, it's impressive she's still going to school.
I mean, she's still going to school. She looks like her hygiene is good. Her clothes are clean. Welding shit all day. I don't know. She seems like she's doing pretty good, actually.
Yeah. Huh. Good for her.
Good for her. Rube Goldberg style deaths.
Yes. Hallmark of the series.
Yes.
They get more. It is funny in this one to see them dialing that into, because I think in part two is where that really it turns into, you know, the opening of Pee-wee's Big Adventure, except at the end someone gets their head cut off.
Yeah. Yeah. Along with that, you'll also find extremely dangerous looking stunts.
Yeah. There was a couple stunts in this movie that look like someone either could have or probably did get very dangerously hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. Came very close.
The first one I noticed was in the plane crash sequence.
Mm-hmm.
Someone gets fucking nailed in the head by a stereo. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's a stereo.
Which also people used to bring their stereos as part of their luggage.
It was a different time. Can't do that anymore. You can hide a gun in there. No, you never know.
Why would you need to, though?
And the other one I noticed was when Miss Luton's kitchen like explodes.
Uh-huh.
Whoever the stuntman was who was in the kitchen when it blew up, like they definitely looked like they got hit with something. So I loved it.
The more dangerous, the better.
Yes.
And last, but certainly not least, pretty good parenting.
All things considered, yeah. They kind of disappear about three quarters away through the movie.
Yeah, but I don't think that's their fault. The dad even tries to have a heart-to-heart with him.
It's true.
And it says, like, I'm worried about you. You're not talking to your friends. You're not talking to me.
Yeah.
And, like,
that's the extent of his interaction.
But they seem like they really care about him, but they're trying to also, you know.
I can say the biggest difference, I would say, between this one and the ones that come after it is there is so much peripheral plot in this movie that the others just do not have.
Yeah.
The cop plot comes back in part five.
Oh, boy.
So where do we start with this?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody ran me in because I'm just going to start throwing out facts here.
I know. I think we have to try to focus on for at least
focus on one.
The first 15 minutes of this conversation.
Yes. The concept here, it started off as an episode, a pitch for an episode of The X-Files, which obviously never got made.
Yep.
But the original pitch was I read it wrong initially, but it says the story was originally going to be a concept for an episode of The X-Files, which was inspired by Soul Survivor, which is a movie from 1984. In this movie, a woman who was the sole survivor of a plane crash starts to be haunted by dead people that death uses temporarily as vessels trying to kill her to correct its plan and killing everyone who suspects it. Do I need to watch this movie?
What?
This movie sounds awesome.
Killing everyone who suspects it?
I might have to watch this movie.
Cool. That poster looks very up your alley.
Judging by these screen caps, it's probably fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Enough to inspire a better idea.
Yeah.
I have to watch that one. Anyway, but yeah, it's we haven't hit the remake boom yet.
Mm-hmm.
We're coming out of the Scream era.
Yep.
And they managed to find probably one of the more original horror concepts even still. Like it's especially as far as franchises go, this is probably the most original thing I've seen in a long time.
It's also like an impressive idea because it is so simple.
Yes.
Like you do start asking questions and you can make it more elaborate, but the concept that there is some form of fate and we all have an appointed time at which we are destined to die.
Mm-hmm.
And if you somehow miss that moment, this force or nature or whatever you want to call it is going to try and correct that.
Right.
It's pretty simple, like on its surface. And it's easy for people to cotton on to pretty quickly.
Yeah, especially even in this one, I feel like there's a lot of there ends up being a lot of business about how this works.
Yeah.
The ins and outs of it's definitely because the concept, I think, is exactly what you're talking about, where big picture, very simple, but this is definitely the kind of thing where once you start drilling down into it, you start thinking, well, shit, well, how does this, what are the mechanics of this?
Right,
like, how does this work?
Right.
Who, what's the order? Is there an order?
Yeah.
Is there any way to get around it? What happens if you do?
Like, should we explain at all why Alex, of all people, has some sort of premonition?
My dog got caught in the wire. Hold on. Okay. Yeah, and like
he's trying to do it again.
As thank you.
Don't worry, he's back in the wires. Everybody.
Yeah, it's are you trying to Final Destination us?
I think that was a yes.
No, it's because I didn't get any steak at dinner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, watching this at the time, maybe you don't start investigating or interrogating this idea as much.
Sure.
But 25, 26 years on, six movies in,
yes,
you go back and you watch this, you start thinking about it. And like the thing that I immediately was thinking about in this one is I was like, okay, why is he getting these visions?
Yeah.
If there is a sentient force that is controlling when you die, then there must be a sentient force who is giving him the hints.
God.
Yeah. Is this
secretly a really Christian movie?
Is it a God and the devil thing going on here? I mean, that would make death inherently evil, which is not, but like, you know, it's,
yeah,
I'm really, don't get me wrong, I am so glad they never try to answer that question.
That's the thing. It's tough because on the one hand, I do feel a little frustrated by having there's no inciting event.
Yeah. That was very ominous.
Thank you. Thank you, dog. Yeah. There's no inciting event to explain why Alex, of all people,
yeah,
gets these visions, and there's no explanation of why Clear has some sort of psychic emotional connection to him.
Their relationship in general, very unclear, ironically.
Pretty good. But she makes a point of saying, I didn't see what you saw, but I did feel what you felt.
Right.
Like, yeah. I was connected to you, and I felt your fear.
Yeah.
And that's why I believed you, is because there was no way you could have faked that. It was, you know, whatever. Why are these psychic children psychic?
Like, I don't
know. What?
I don't know.
I understand that it's for the best that this movie doesn't try to answer that, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm not advocating for the movie trying to answer it, because it would have been unsatisfying no matter how they did it. But it does feel a little bit like, oh, huh? Oh, okay. We're just gonna take this for granted.
10,000 years ago, death impregnated a woman, and all of these people are of the lineage of that child.
Yeah,
and must be removed from the earth.
I was kind of hoping for like, oh, he had a near miss. You know, like there was a car accident earlier and he was almost killed, but he somehow miraculously walked away without a scratch.
Yeah, there's a certain element to it where, like, I think what makes it work, especially or maybe exclusively, depending on how you look at it, in the first one, is that the vision that he gets, you can chalk that up to just anxiety to a certain extent.
Yeah.
You know, because like this one and the second one and the third one, the first disaster, they're all things that are, it's very easy to obsess about things going wrong.
Yeah.
So in this one, it's the plane.
Yep.
The second one, it's a very busy highway at high speeds. The third one is a roller coaster.
Yeah.
And having it be that this kind of relatable situation.
Yeah.
That instills fear in a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
Even if you're not inherently afraid of driving. You know, right. when have you ever felt comfortable driving behind a giant logging truck or something?
Or like,
you know?
who hasn't had a moment when they were driving when someone else around them on the road did something that freaked them out?
Yeah. Or a roller coaster. I mean, you're
you're paying. In that case, you're paying to get scared.
I have an interesting love-hate relationship with roller coasters where I hated
them
for a long
time. Did
one
leave you for another man?
Yes. I hated them for a long time because they scared me. Then I started riding them and they still scared me, but I liked them. Mm-hmm. And then I got over it. And then I didn't go on a roller coaster for like 15 years. And then when I went on another one, I was like, shit, all of that resistance I built up is gone.
Oh.
But anyway, like I realized that the only thing that scared me about roller coasters was the first hill because, and I mean, that's usually the scariest part.
It's the slow build up
the
hill.
And it gives you all of this time to think about all of the things that could go wrong.
And you're
wrong.
Looking ahead at the whole track.
I always close my eyes.
Really?
Yeah. For the big ones, not for all of them, but for like the really tall ones.
That's funny.
I had to close my eyes.
Huh.
Yeah, I couldn't do it.
I would not have clocked you as somebody who got scared on roller coasters.
It's the height. It's heights. I'm really bad with heights.
That's fair. Yeah.
Where were we recently? We were somewhere. When we were in Austria, we went up to the tower of the big church, St. Stephen's, right in the middle there.
Yep.
And I could not go to the edge.
Oh.
Even though between me and a certain death is like 2 feet of concrete that's been there for hundreds of years.
Right, right.
I couldn't do it. Yeah. I had to like hang back. Because just being that close,
it was too.
Yeah,
yeah.
Even we went to the Empire State Building. I couldn't go to the edge of that either.
Huh.
And I just, for whatever reason, I just couldn't do it.
So you're never going to go to Vegas and do one of those rides the top of the tower and swings you out.
My wife has done that.
Ugh.
Yeah.
That's too much for me.
No, she loves that shit.
I'm not particularly afraid of heights, but I also don't have a death wish. So there we go.
Oh, there's a good one in Auckland, actually. You go to Auckland, there's like a Space Needle thing. When you go up in there and you can walk around, it's glass all the way around, right? Mm-hmm. But in certain sections, there's glass on the floor.
Yeah,
so
they
can look straight down.
They got that in Shanghai.
Oh, do they really?
It's fucking terrifying. It's great.
Also, you should have your husband, if he's interested. Mm-hmm. You can do, it's not a bungee jump, but it's a controlled fall. From the top of it?
I think he's looking into those.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. I don't know if he's going to do that exact one, but he's definitely looking into it.
Yeah.
He's going to Final Destination himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should watch the newest one before you go, because the opening...
Make him watch the newest one before we go?
Because the opening sequence is in one of those Space Needles.
Yeah, no thanks. Maybe I'll hold. I'll hold until later this summer when I'm back. But yeah, I think it is smart to set it up. This movie especially, because the fear of flying is so common.
Yeah.
And even, again, it is like driving, where even if you are not inherently afraid of it, if you fly with any regularity or you've ever been on a flight where something has felt wrong or like you've hit turbulence or there was some sort of problem, it's so easy to get scared really quickly.
Yeah.
It's so easy to go from somebody who is actually like a calm flyer and not bothered to... Oh, wait, is this plane going to crash?
Yeah.
your whole personality can change very quickly when you sort of break that barrier in your brain of like, oh, wait, that something horrible could happen.
Yeah. I've noticed personally that, if I go a long time not flying, the first plane I take after that, I kind of white knuckle it until we get up into the air.
Right. Until you level off and then it feels smoother.
But then I actually, coming back from Mexico last year.
Oh, right.
We got some gnarly turbulence.
Yeah.
I was having the time of my life.
Really?
I don't know what, for whatever reason.
That's so funny because one of our other friends was like actively texting us being like, it's horrible. I'm going to throw up everywhere.
Yeah. Everybody's getting sick or like worried.
Oh,
we were really shit. It felt like we were on a roller coaster and I was like, had my hands up basically. And I usually.
You got one of those beer helmets and you're just drinking them. And
I don't know what. Happened.
That's really great.
But
actually,
like, anytime I've been in turbulence before, you know, I start getting tense. But this time I was just like, yeah, let's do it.
This is how I go out. This
is
how I go
all
out.
All going down together, like Billy Joel. And I think one of the things that works really well here, too, is, which is something they lose in the later ones, to a certain extent, is that Devin Sawa's character stays anxious.
Like,
his anxiety getting on the plane is at one level, but after the thing happens, he now becomes obsessed with why.
Yeah.
And he starts, like, spiraling.
Yep. Especially after his best friend. After Todd dies.
Yeah.
After the sentient water gets him.
Yes.
Yeah.
And which brings us to a subplot, which the fact that there is a subplot at all.
There's a couple subplots.
There's
in
a
this.
Couple.
Yeah.
But, like, again, as we go forward in the series, not so many. I was really surprised to see a possible framing him for murder subplot.
Yes. Yes.
Where death is kind of like trying to imply that he's
like
killing
maybe you. The way we kill death is thinking maybe the way I kill Alex is that I get him sent to the electric chair.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how I'm going to make sure he dies.
Yeah.
Is, you know, have him framed of killing like three people.
And I don't know if, like, that feels to me a bit like we have a good concept, but we can't quite get 90 minutes out of this.
Yeah.
As it stands. Like, what's going on here?
It also feels a little bit like you mentioned at the top, this was initially a spec script for the X-Files, right?
Yes.
So... Yeah. It maybe feels like they didn't revise far enough away from that initial script as much as they should
have. If you wanted to, this movie could be over an hour.
Right. You know? And if you wanted to make it an X-Files episode, you absolutely could.
Right.
Yeah. And I feel like having so much emphasis on the FBI agent subplot throughout the whole thing felt like a vestigial limb of that other iteration of this. And I understand it was probably left in to fill time, but it did just make the concept a little fuzzier.
Yeah.
Of this. Yeah. Is he being, is this a sentient death framing him?
Yes.
And also, how dumb are these FBI agents? And also, how dumb is Alex? Because I understand they had to be initially suspicious of him with the flight. But he's supposed to be, what, like 17 or something?
Yeah, I think so.
How do you think he knows how to sabotage a plane?
That's...
The internet didn't even really exist then.
I don't know if they are so much thinking that he caused the initial thing as much as they are that he's involved with the following deaths.
But they do kind of think... at first that he might have something to do with the plane crash. That's why you're keeping such a close eye on him and why.
Although, yeah, if you were an actual investigator looking at what happened, most bombing suspects don't scream, "There's a bomb on the plane."
Right. You all should get off. Like, yeah, I don't know. Again, it's one of those things where, when you're first watching this movie and you're just kind of along for the ride, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But the minute you start asking any kind of questions,
yeah,
it's so easy to start like spiraling into these deeper and deeper holes of, well, wait, why would they do that? Well, then why did they do this? Well, what about this?
How do you feel about that whole concept? Because I think that there's an argument that if you're watching a movie and you are, it has hooked you enough that you are not paying attention or not caring about some of these more minute inconsistencies or whatever, that doesn't make it, like, tying up all these loose ends doesn't inherently make it a better movie.
No, it doesn't. But I will say this movie has all, like... The cop plot has always bothered me.
Sure.
In this one.
Well, that's because they're generally terrible.
Yeah. Right. So I agree with what you're saying. I think there have been a bunch of movies recently where people have tried to sort of, like, I don't know why this came to mind, but the movie Weapons.
Sure.
I loved Weapons. Mm-hmm. I thought it was fantastic. I think there were a bunch of people who were like, well, what about this? And like, how did nobody notice this? And how come nobody did this? But when I watched that movie, I wasn't thinking of any of that.
Mm-hmm.
I was fully in. I was along for the ride.
Right.
You can try and poke holes in it, and that's fine. But I agree with you in that case. It didn't detract from the experience of it as a movie for me.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, yeah, when that happens, I think everybody has a different threshold.
Mm-hmm.
But truly good movies are able to do that and kind of sweep most people away. Yeah. I don't think this is that.
Sure.
I like this movie, but some of the like you were saying earlier when I mentioned Pretty Good Parenting, you were like, yeah, but the parents kind of disappear at the end.
Yeah.
But that never bothered me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I didn't even really clock them as characters.
Where are his parents?
Yeah.
Like, what are they doing? But yeah, a lot of the cop stuff where I was just kind of like, wait, why do they think he did something to the plane?
Yeah, and then like them being suspicious after his friend apparently seemingly commits suicide.
Right, which everybody seems very ready to believe that it was suicide.
Yeah.
Like we were saying, the sentient water staged it like a mafia hit to look like a suicide.
What's funny is they go through all of the trouble in the Miss Luton sequence to actually have him leave bloody footprints in the house and touch the knife that kills her.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think the cops ever even bring that up, do they? Like, do they ever go like, those are his footprints?
One of the characters said that like the heat of the fire, like, caramelized the blood or something, and so they could see that it was his footprints.
Okay.
I don't know about the knife.
It's like, it's weird that that plot element seems unrefined.
Yes.
Because like, even though they have this scene where Death is pretty egregiously framing him for murder,
they then blow up the house.
They blow up the house, and then it never really comes back in any meaningful way.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's a couple of those things in there, like the kind of one-off bit after Todd kills himself. Sorry, seemingly kills himself. And there's that scene where Alex is yelling at Todd's father.
Yeah.
Saying like, you know, it's he was okay with it. It was you that didn't like it.
Yeah.
So there's like father involvement here that's not really ever anything. And he's gone from the movie after that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like there's a few of these things that's like, okay, none of it really feels out of place, but none of it really adds anything.
Right.
Like,
right. It's there for the moment and then it gets dropped once you've moved past that sequence.
Yeah.
It never has a bigger impact.
A really big one is the character of Carter, who after Stifler gets killed and they're like, he's like, oh, it skipped me.
Mm-hmm.
He's gone until the final scene of the movie.
Yeah.
He just disappears.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, I'm safe now. All right, bye.
Yeah. And then at the end, they're all friends.
Yes, somehow. Yeah.
But yeah, I think that stuff aside, I think it is a really great premise.
Yeah.
And I do think one of the more subtly interesting, maybe it's not so subtle because it's a lot of people yelling about it, but I do think the kind of subtle free will versus fate thing it's playing with is interesting because
are you talking about when Carter has my favorite line in the whole movie where he just says in line at the memorial and he goes, I'm never gonna die.
Yes. But you know, that comes out in certain things where like they're all in the car and he's like, well, I guess I can just drive however I want. If this is not how I'm supposed to die, then I'm invincible.
Well, isn't his thing, if I'm going to die, I'm going to kill myself.
Oh, maybe.
I think that's what he's doing in that sequence where he ends up on the train tracks.
That was one of the things I was thinking about. Like, what happens if one of these people is supposed to die kill themselves? They cover that in part four.
Well, then.
Death doesn't let you do it.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
There's one character who's like,
F this, I'm not waiting. Yeah. I'm just going to jump off this bridge or whatever.
His family's dead or something. Mm-hmm. So he's like, I'm going to join my family.
Yeah.
And so the two main characters find him at his house hanging and then they get him out and he's like, son of a bitch. He's like, why are you trying to kill yourself? He's like, I've been trying to kill myself all day. I took a bottle of pills. Oh, I drank a bottle of wine. Jesus. I tried to hang myself. It won't let me die.
Wow. I mean, the flip side to that is you then start killing the other people. in order to speed it up to get to you.
Well.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Well. Part five.
Oh, my God. Does this count as us covering all of the Final Destination movies then, maybe, other than two, maybe, since we're skipping that one for Patreon?
In part five, the new addition to the lore is, mm-hmm, that if you survive the thing, mm-hmm, like if you cheat death,
yeah,
you can basically take the marker off of you if you murder another person who was not supposed to die for a while.
Oh.
And so the
you find a replacement.
Yeah. So the big final sequence in five, mm-hmm, is this one character who is, his girlfriend was killed and he's kind of, mm-hmm, lost his mind, mm-hmm, decides to kill the person I was talking about before, who, mm, was there, mm-mm, in the vision, but was not supposed to die in the vision.
Mm.
So he's going to kill her, and so it'll skip him.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, that doesn't end up happening. But other fun thing, Lord, about part five.
Oh, my God.
Spoilers for part five.
I think we're past that point.
Final Destination 5 is a stealth prequel to the first one. Because the plot of the movie, God, the main character is like in training as a chef, mm, and the character plot, mm, is that he gets this internship at a Paris kitchen restaurant, whatever, mm, kitchen restaurant, you know,
kitchens. One of those standard places.
Yeah. And he's not going to take it because, mm, he's got this girlfriend, but the girlfriend dumps him, mm, and then, oh, I dumped you because you got to go do this and blah, 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 blah. Long story short, too late. they decide to go together. And so they survive the ending of this movie,
mm-hmm,
and then they decide to both go to Paris
to get on flight 180.
And you find out in the final scene that they are on flight 180.
2000.
Yep.
Wow.
Which I didn't clock it entirely, mm-hmm, but something felt out of place because one of the characters, this movie was made in like 2006 or 2007 or something, mm-hmm, maybe a little even later than that.
Mm-hmm.
And in one of the first sequences, someone's on a cell phone and it's a very old cell phone.
Oh.
It's like, why is he using that cell phone? But
they gotcha.
Anyway, what are we talking about?
I have no idea anymore. A Final Destination.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so much of this extra peripheral stuff that just kind of flies, yeah, by the wayside.
Like Carter's weird aggression towards Alex.
Yeah.
Which starts like even before anything else?
Yeah. I can chalk that up to just like these are two
teenage boys.
Two kids who have been in school forever, never got along.
Yeah. Fair enough.
The one character, so we can talk about the characters a bit.
Yeah.
The one character who I really like because of how little they have to do for him,
mm,
is Stifler. Because he just happens to be there.
Right.
And he's not part, he accidentally gets taken off the plane.
Yep.
And through the rest of the movie, he's just kind of like along for the ride.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's clearly very oblivious to the like actual stakes and like bigger implications for a, yeah, while. Like he's convinced that it's just that Alex can see the future and is psychic.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, I asked this girl out. Is she going to say yes?
Yeah.
Like that's his main concern.
But his whole interaction after that is so completely almost coincidental.
Mm-hmm.
Like Alex is running away from Miss Luton's house, mm-hmm, right as Stifler's, yeah, riding by on his bike.
That is like a running gag, right?
Because, yeah,
it happens outside the coffee shop too. When,
yeah,
before poor Terry gets killed by the bus ninja.
Stealth bus.
Yeah.
Ninja bus.
Yeah. The ninja bus.
You've never taken ninja bus from Boston to New York?
I haven't. That must have been one that I missed out of downtown.
Yeah, if you talk, they throw you up.
She sounds great.
But yeah, he's a really kind of nothing character, but Sean William Scott I think is,
yeah,
charming enough
that he kind of makes, yeah, it work. He plays that character and that type of character so well,
yeah,
that it's really easy to just be like, oh yeah, it's that guy.
I think if they made this a couple years later, mm-hmm, with him,
mm-hmm,
I think that character is a lot bigger.
And probably way more obnoxious.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I think he definitely could have dialed, yeah, it up. But this, I think, yeah, might be like his first movie or one of his first movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Carter is I mean, fairly one note.
Yeah, he's really just there to antagonize Alex.
Yeah.
Seems to be the whole thing.
Every one of these movies always has someone whose girlfriend gets killed. And yeah. then they turn into a psychopath.
Poor Terry. poor Terry. Still, I think the best kill in the whole movie.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. What is my favorite kill? I think I really like the sequence with Miss Luton just because yeah. it's so preposterous.
Yeah, like we were saying with Rube Goldberg style.
Yeah, that's the first one that's yeah. really
keeps going.
Yeah.
Like the buildup is like... The buildup for Todd is pretty long, and then the actual death is pretty quick and pretty brutal, actually. Like,
yeah.
A lot of the kill scenes in this are pretty brutal. Even the premonition of the plane going down, when yeah. you see it all happen, you see that guy get clocked by a stereo, you see them get sucked out of the side of the plane, you see them go up in flames. Like, yeah. it's pretty, like, all right, wow, they really went there. Todd's death is pretty rough. I actually think when you see him hanging there at the end and he's clearly dead, I was kind of shocked.
Yeah.
You know, that you think he's maybe going to make it and go yeah. warn the others or something, because he feels like he should be like the secondary protagonist, and instead he's off the board.
Yeah. And the way they have his the blood vessels yeah, in his eyes pop yeah, and stuff, it's pretty brutal.
Pretty yeah. gross. Yeah, but the Miss Luton one is where it tips, I think, all the way into very, very, very black comedy.
Yeah.
Because her whole setup takes forever. Yes. It takes long enough that she's on the phone and she spots Alex and she calls the FBI agents who come pick Alex up, and they take him to the station and they interrogate him for a while, and then they let him go, and then he has enough time to, on foot, get back to her house.
Yeah.
And then she dies.
Yeah. Also, he knows where she lives, which is weird. I guess she's lived there her whole life.
She lives in a small yeah. town. Yeah. I could buy it. But yes, the series of events that leads to her getting killed is like seven different things.
Yeah. It really, I do appreciate, I don't know if it's a matter of them having not really refined the technique yet or what, but I do think it works that there is a wide swath of death scenes and it's not just Rube Goldberg every time. Because you've got the Miss Luton sequence, which is yes. very involved.
Yeah.
But then obviously there's the stealth bus. And sometimes they get you into the fake out, like yep. with the train and the piece of metal cuts Stifler's head off.
Yep.
I think they do a pretty good job of spreading it out, not making it very monotonous or repetitive.
Yeah It's not like every death comes out totally out of nowhere, because yeah. then you'd get a sense of, well, there's nothing anyone could possibly do to save themselves, right? If every death in the movie was stealth bus, sorry, that's it, you're gonna get hit by a bus.
That would be a fantastic movie. That would be incredible.
I feel like that's one of those late night Adult Swim.
Yeah.
You know, when they were letting people direct like 15 to 30 minute quote unquote commercials. I think one of those should
be so good.
Everyone keeps getting murdered by a bus.
That would be such a good. That's like a $2 million low budget horror movie.
That lasts for about 23 minutes.
Bus Jaws or something.
You just rewrote Duel.
Yeah, but in this one it's just a bus sneaking up on and killing people. That's more Christine.
Yeah, that's more Christine.
Christine would be a much better movie if it was just Christine.
The car sneaking up on
hitting people at high speeds from out of nowhere.
Just bodies flying over the hood. But no, I'm yeah. It's nice that the build up is varied on the different kills. There's some that are more elaborate. There's some that are less. There's some that there's like, it's kind of in the middle, like the decapitation death. It keeps cutting back and forth to that piece of metal under the train shaking. And so you get the glimpse before it happens that it's going to happen, but it doesn't leave you hanging too long.
That's a sequence too, where even in this one, they're kind of playing with, okay, let's put together a sequence where it's not entirely clear who's going to get killed, because obviously usually it's one on one. And so this one, everybody's together.
Mm-hmm.
Seemingly Carter is next.
Yeah.
Seemingly he's missed it.
Mm-hmm.
So what's going on? Oh, no, Stifler gets it.
Yeah.
That's they managed to keep it pretty surprising in that way.
Yeah.
Heat, man. I love a good mandibular decapitation when they get you between the between the teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Always a huge fan of that. I have this weird memory, which is obviously not in the movie, of a cut to Stifler's the top of his head where his eyes blink, like his head is off, on the ground, and like his eyes are open and then his eyes blink and it's like just the top half of his head. I think that might be a different movie. But I mean, it must be because it's not.
It wasn't
in this one.
Yeah, and we watched it on streaming, so it wasn't like the edited for TV version.
Well, who knows? Because they do that shit all the time now.
That's true. But
that's why you got to watch movies on Tubi.
You don't
use Tubi at all?
Yeah, I have. I
love Tubi. Tubi is like, it is the closest, I think I've said this before, it's the closest thing there is to going to a video store and searching the racks of like an old video store.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you find a movie that's just like a scan of a VHS tape.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yes, I mean,
this is what we're doing tonight.
This is how this Italian World War II movie was meant to be seen.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about Clear?
I do. I want to talk about Clear and Alex. Every time I see this, I forget her name is Clear Rivers.
I sincerely thought people were mispronouncing Claire.
Yeah, it sounds like they're not saying Claire correctly.
Yeah.
Or it's like a Philadelphia pronunciation.
Right. I was like, is this a Canadian way of saying Clear or whatever? Clear? I don't know.
Yeah, she's she is like the quintessential. So here's the thing: she's the quintessential late '90s, early 2000s. Like, for I don't know if I would call her the manic pixie dream girl because she's not really she's not Deschanel enough for
right,
that.
Right.
But she's definitely the late grunge era version of that.
Yes.
Where she's super hot.
Mm-hmm.
But you can tell she's an outcast because she reads and she has bangs.
Yep.
And brown hair.
Yes.
And she also is an industrial artist.
Yes. She does like welding and sculpture.
Yes.
Yeah.
Clear Rivers walked so Megan Fox and Transformers could run.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's she's this character that screams love interest.
Yeah.
But there is like,
she's not like other girls, Clay.
But there is absolutely nothing in this movie that tells me that they would end up together in this movie. Like, there's no romance in this movie at all.
Yeah.
I think I had read somewhere that there was, but like people weren't into it, so they cut it out. Because at the end, when he gets like blown up or whatever. She's trying to, she's like, wake up. She says, come on, baby.
Yeah, and she does. Like,
baby.
She does. That's right. Yeah. And it is very jarring.
And there's that weird scene where she's like, the sculpture I did is you.
Yeah. It's how you make me feel.
It's representative of the strange attraction that I have.
Yes. Yeah. Like,
her voice was equally as deep when she said it too.
Well, she's such a weird character too, because I don't think she behaves in a consistent way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're given a lot about her as like, here's her situation and stuff, but she acts very different depending on what kind of person the movie needs her to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the scene where she takes Alex to break into the mortuary/funeral home to see Todd's dead body.
Which he reacts to very...
They both do, to be honest.
I guess they kind of get it. Because I remember that scene when it starts, he's like, is that him? It's like, yeah, you don't know what your friend looks like, but then they go into the makeup thing.
Right. But she makes comments when they do that, like, oh, yeah, I like doing stuff like this. I think it's kind of hot. You know, like she says something.
She gets
something.
A rush from doing things she's not supposed to.
That's it. But she very much doesn't seem like the type of character who does things that she's not supposed to.
No. Well.
Not like in that sort of like illegal
No.
Way. Like, she seems more like, oh, she's kind of dark and brooding, yeah. and like, she's artsy and weird and a social outcast.
But you can tell from her white tank top and her big pants.
Yeah. The uniform of everyone yeah. in the year 2000. But like we're saying, like she's kind of the only student who seems to be absorbing French. She's mm-hmm. reading Henry Miller in high school for fun, which is both like transgressive, but also deeply nerdy.
Yes.
Like that's something that even a bunch of her teachers probably wouldn't even know why she probably shouldn't be reading that in high school.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. She's old enough. Whatever.
The pension book was too big to get onto the plane.
Yeah. But do you know what I mean? Like yeah. she strikes me more as the type of character where you would expect more behavior of like, look, I don't know what I'm going to do in this small town. Like my parents, my mom, my dad's dead. My mom's gone. Mm-hmm. I have to just keep my head down so nobody notices and I don't get put in like foster care for a year before I have to figure out what the fuck else I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Like she seems much more like she's out on the fringes, not, oh, I'm a thrill seeker who's looking for a rush.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And there's so much built into, like, so much of this weird backstory stuff built into her
mm-hmm.
that is, I would say, unnecessary. Like,
yeah. Yeah, if you wanted to be like, she's home alone, just be like, I don't know, her parents went on vacation because they thought she was going to be on vacation.
Yeah, I don't know, because like on the one hand, I guess it comes down to, I can see how in a movie like this especially, and this is, they kind of do this a bit in slasher movies, but I feel mm-hmm. like they don't have the same latitude that something like this has,
mm-hmm.
Where your characters can be very archetypal.
Yeah.
Is it archetypal or archetypical?
Eh, whatever.
Whatever, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Because you really only need them to have like a singular point of view.
Yeah.
And then they get killed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Slasher movies, it's tougher because they're all like teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
And here, and especially moving forward, you can grab a smattering of completely different people if you want.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have like a lawyer or stuff right, that's right. just not just all kids.
Yeah.
But like, I guess it begs the question, how much character stuff do you want to put on to these characters?
Mm.
Because where does it stop? When does it start becoming filler? You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
Because like Todd had the other brother,
mm-hmm.
that whole thing, and his dad, and then Clear's got her whole baggage.
Yes.
Carter's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Stifler, I don't know a damn thing about. He likes yeah. the Rangers. I know that much.
The Jets.
He likes the Jets too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Poor Terry.
Terry, nothing. No idea.
Even she likes even butterfly Alex. Clips, and she's determined that she's not going to let this ruin her life.
Yes.
Yep.
Even Alex is like, when you come down to it, there's not really a lot going on there. It's
yeah.
it's he's focused on the story at hand.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that you like, you don't need there to be, well, you know, my dad's, you know, being, he's my parents are breaking up, and like
yeah.
any of this character stuff that's superfluous to the story.
Yeah.
Whereas Clear seems to be entirely that.
Yes. That's kind of what I think what's what I mean by like, she sort of just becomes whatever the movie needs
yeah.
her to be to either. They're like, okay, we need an emotional moment here. Yeah. Let's have her monologue about her dad getting his head blown off. And we'll use that as a way that she also can connect with Alex through the randomness of death.
Yeah.
Or no, we're going to have her be like a thrill seeker who knows how to break into the morgue.
You just go through the window.
The stained glass window in the ceiling that brings you directly into the room you need to be in.
Yeah, they're all the same design. It's one guy.
How many morgues do you have the layout memorized to?
Well, you only need one.
You only need one?
They're all the same.
Mm, interesting. How would you know that unless you'd been to multiple?
I love funerals. I just like to, you know, even be, if I don't know the people, I just go to hang out.
You just don't want them to be lonely.
I just like
the corpses.
I just really enjoy
the smell of formaldehyde.
No, free mints and hand sanitizer.
I don't think I'm advocating for the movie to like add more character to Clear. I think I want it to take some away.
Yeah, I think it's just like she doesn't have a lot of as much as I feel like this is the weakest form of this.
Mm.
Alex, you get Alex's character through the way he reacts to all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Clear doesn't really engage with a lot of it.
Right.
It's a lot of other peripheral stuff.
Yeah.
And, excuse me, even like Carter,
mm-hmm.
you understand that, oh, he's just kind of a dick, but he is also reacting very strongly to what is happening.
Right, right. Like a lot of his douchebag behavior throughout the movie is that he's scared.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And it's, they don't call attention to, I bet there's a scene where they do, but that they cut, but, the train sequence.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed that when they pull him out of the car, he has clearly pissed himself.
Yes, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, nobody mentions it in the movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, Clear is. I feel like they have to pump the tires with something else because, and it has to be like it's that sort of the curse of being the female co-lead in a movie like this, where it's like, well, we have to make her attractive to the guys coming to watch this movie, which never seems to be the case with the guy in the movie.
Well, the assumption is girls are not coming to watch this movie.
Yeah, but they are, though. I mean,
yes, I'm aware.
Yeah. Don't tell me what the girls like. I know what the girls like. I don't. I really do not.
Someone clip that, please.
But yeah, she's not really, she doesn't really have a point of view on stuff. She's just kind of there. And so they have to put these quirky trappings on, which is where the manic pixie dream girl thing. But she's like, I don't know.
Manic depressive
dream girl. Yeah.
And I think it's also difficult because of the place she holds socially. She's not connected to any of these people.
Right.
You know, at least everybody else. I mean, and it kind of works for Billy, for Stifler there, because it's played comically that he's just like, I don't know, I was locked in the bathroom. I don't even know why I'm here. So it works for him. But then everyone else involved in this scenario, they're all connected to each other. There's Carter and his girlfriend, and then there's Todd and Alex, who are best friends. And then Carter and Alex have this weird dislike and like rivalry towards each other that, even though it's very negative, it is a connection.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the teacher, who's all of their teacher, right? Like Miss Luton, she knows all of them through school. And then you've got Clear, and she's just kind of, I don't know, she happened to be in the French class with them and is somehow mysteriously connected to Alex.
Yes.
And we get no real explanation of why or how. And
she even says, she's like, we've gone to school together for 5 years and we've never even spoken to each other.
Yeah, exactly. So I do think they do kind of have to add in these more surface sort of like quote unquote character elements to give her more positioning in the movie.
Yeah. I have to imagine there's more stuff that they cut out. Cause like the stuff, like that mystical connection stuff and the fact that they end up together at the end,
it just feels like very arbitrary.
I don't know if it goes to show how unnecessary like active romance plots are, because like when you get to the end of the movie, seeing them together, you kind of go, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
like it doesn't surprise me that maybe it's just movies have ingrained in my brain so much that these two characters, boy and girl, they will kiss or they will be together at the end.
And I think it does kind of make sense that they end up together. He was literally willing to die to save her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to bond two people very quickly, very, very closely. So,
see, you would think so, but that was always my opening line.
I will die for you?
Yeah, and it never seemed to work.
We have to actually do it then.
Oh, I did.
Yeah.
I would say that, and I would say,
and then you grab a power line and go, ugh.
Yeah. fork right into the plug.
I would die for you like this.
Yeah.
What about?
I'm now seeing why this probably wasn't the best idea.
What about Tony Todd?
Yeah, we have to talk about Tony Todd. I would say he's as important to these movies as mm-hmm. the music is to Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Like he has one scene usually.
Yep.
And he always kills it. He's always great.
Yep.
You know, he's not in 4.
Mm.
And his voice is in 3.
Mm.
But they know what they've got with him.
Yeah.
And I think he plays a great character because he's like this Harbinger character.
Yes. Everybody knows I fucking love a Harbinger.
Mm-hmm. But he's also like, he knows too much.
Yeah.
So you start thinking like, well, especially if I remember correctly, like the one scene he has in part 2, you find yourself going like, is he deaf?
Yeah. But I think that is supposed to be a little bit of.
Yeah.
It is set up to make you think about that.
Yeah.
Like I love his scene in this movie so much. It's such a wild swing in so many ways because he's literally treating their dead or Alex's dead best friend. He's literally preparing him for a funeral and a burial.
Yeah.
As they watch.
Yeah. When he does that like thing where he pulls the thing out of him, I'm like, come on, man.
Yeah. He is just fucking with them at that point.
Yeah.
The fact that he doesn't yell at them for breaking in and instead just scares the absolute shit out of them, I love. I love that his whole spiel is about death being inevitable and it's coming for you. And then as they're leaving, he just goes, see you soon.
Yeah.
I crack up every time.
Yeah.
I love it.
Although, you know, I feel like death is not really doing him a lot of favors because especially as the movies go on, there is less and less body to deal with. There's a lot of complete dismemberment going on in this series.
You know, you still got to pay the funeral home for some sort of service.
For the shovel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
And the bag.
But he just, I love it because he comes in, you know, like, like we were saying, Stifler.
Mm-hmm.
He's playing that kind of goofy character, but he's doing a fairly, you know, like, moderate job of it, right? Like that kind of silly, like haphazard type of guy. No one is really that much of a caricature.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They're not exactly like deep three-dimensional characters, but they are all played pretty straight.
Yeah.
And then you've got Tony Todd come in, and it's so fun in this movie to have somebody really just go for it and like chew the scenery a little bit in a way that I think this movie kind of needs.
Yeah. He is the Vincent Price monologue of this movie's thriller.
Yes.
And it's very important because it definitely, and it happens at perfect time. Because the stakes are always kind of the same in this, but having him tell them to you really makes it feel like they've upped the stakes.
Mm-hmm.
He has a great scene in the most recent one. Which I think might have been the last thing he did before he died.
Mm-hmm, I think so.
And they gave him a really great exit.
Good.
They also give him more backstory than I was expecting. But he's great. I mean, man, what a voice.
God, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if only he did it dressed as Candyman. We didn't really talk about Alex that much. I don't know. I don't think
there's a lot to talk about Alex. He's a character who's more, he is what he does.
Yeah.
Rather than anything else, really. Otherwise, he's like generic high school dude.
Yeah, I would say the thing that I like about him is that and Devin Sawa is just really good at this, is playing like the tweaked out anxious guy. And they never really take their foot off the gas with that in this. And especially going into the last act or so, which I think is probably the worst part of the movie.
Yeah.
Cause it gets really weird. Like after Stifler dies, it almost feels like they jump forward in time a bunch.
Yeah. But they don't.
There's no indication that they do.
Right.
But like all of a sudden Alex is at what seems to be Clear's father's cabin.
Yeah.
Even though they never say that.
Yeah.
And it, they're trying to make it seems like he's been there for a while, but it also seems like he just got there.
Yeah, like they're kind of. It's weird because he goes from frantic but like still fairly lucid and like somewhat still holding mm-hmm. on to stability, and then they jump to this part with him in the cabin, and he's like duct taping lamps to the wall, and it's clearly supposed to feel like he's losing it.
Yeah.
Like he's going kind of crazy. He's holding up fish hooks and saying, ah, yeah, tetanus. This is how you were going to get me. Like, which feels like something that would be more appropriate if he had been spending like weeks alone in the cabin rather than maybe like an hour and a half.
Right. Also, the cabin is within
running distance,
paddling and running distance to Clear's house.
Yeah.
So I don't know where this is supposed to be.
I have no idea.
But it's not like a remote cabin. Yeah.
I do think it's kind of great that he almost gets drowned by a tree.
Yeah.
I kind of think that's
That's good with the
pretty great
face in a puddle. That's always a good one. But yeah, like we said before, Carter just disappears.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not that there's anything really for him to do.
Yeah.
And the final sequence with Clear is like it feels like they were like, okay, we need to make this.
Mm-hmm.
Big and flashy,
mm-hmm.
and they took that literally by making it very electricity focused.
Yeah.
And it's fine, but it's, I don't know. One of the things that I like less and less in this series is the idea that the person who had the initial premonition now gets like spider sense that this other thing is going to happen.
Yeah.
Which can be either like, in this one, it's at least relatively subtle,
mm-hmm.
but in some of the later ones relatively
subtle, like your Penthouse magazine gets chewed up by a fan and drops a little piece of paper on your leg that says Todd.
Yeah, that man. What an interesting choice. I was trying to figure, like, I was like, who is that on the cover of this Penthouse magazine? And then in the inside that like the featured article, the title is like the Tyne has come. So it's her name must be Tyne something.
Sure.
Anyway, I'm sure it's out there somewhere.
Yeah.
Is there an internet movie database for just porno mags that show up?
Probably.
Have you ever seen this is very useful for me as someone who is always looking for reference.
Mm.
There is an entire Wikipedia that is just cars and guns in movies.
That's great.
It's incredible.
That's amazing.
So you can look up a movie
and
it will give you every gun, if it's like a sci-fi movie, it'll give you what the guns are based on, like are built off of.
That's really
the same cool. thing with cars and stuff. It's really cool. So what I'm saying is they need one of those for pornos.
get working.
Which
on
are
it.
Just as prevalent in movies as cars and guns. it's a weird sequence. I don't know. Like the logic behind the end of it is like, well, if I die first, then you don't die, and it's like,
it's like
I wish these movies at the end, death would show up and go, that's not how it works. I mean, I guess he does because he ends up killing everybody, but
I don't know. I mean, it's I think like many movies, this is a tough concept to end.
Yeah.
Like, especially where this clearly very, very intentionally set itself up for sequels,
mm-hmm.
right? Of, oh, it isn't if you manage to get it to skip you, if someone intervenes and saves you and it skips over you to the next person, well, then you're done. You're free. You go on with your life.
Right.
Like, that's not how this movie ends up having it work.
Yeah.
It loops back around eventually. To then try and get you whoever's left again in the order.
Right.
And so it's hard. How do you end a movie like that?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think the consistent, they all end kind of the same way, which is they come up with their convoluted way to beat death, and they end up pulling that off in a large scale final sequence, and then the final scene is death going and then he kills everybody, which is kind of the only way you can do it. But we get that final sequence where he blows himself up, sort of.
Yeah, yeah. He electrocutes himself, and then the car explodes and flings him into the...
My favorite part of that sequence is when the car's on fire, mm-hmm. and he's yelling at her, saying, like, I need to do this. I'm for you. And then he's like, when I grab the electrical wire, you know what to do.
Right. Wouldn't you say like, pretty what are you talking explicitly about? Get out of the car and run?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I don't know. One would think she might be panicking a little bit.
Little bit. Yeah.
And then we do get the sort of the after scene where they've gone to France and she's now become a blonde.
Well, she's normal now.
Yeah. Yeah. She's found the right man.
Yeah.
So now
the right man turned her hair blonde.
Yeah.
And added 5 years to her age. She looks remarkably older with her natural hair.
Still very beautiful.
Oh, she's gorgeous.
Yeah.
She honestly, watching this movie, I was like, why wasn't she a bigger star?
Because she's
like fine enough as an actress, but she is gorgeous.
I mean, I think this character really, they didn't give her a lot to work with, right?
Like, sure.
No actor in this movie had, other than Tony Todd, had a really juicy part to like sink their teeth into in terms of nuance and all of this different stuff. Mm. I think the character of Alex gives you a lot just because he's so active. He's running around, he's doing stuff, he's getting visions, he's saving people's lives. Like, you get a lot to do there. But everyone else in this movie, you know, they're not given a whole hell of a lot to work with. And I think they all do a pretty decent job.
I wonder if this wasn't necessarily the right move for her.
Yeah.
Because I'm just trying to think of like 2026 trajectory.
Mm.
I mean, actually, even at the time, because she did Varsity Blues before this,
mm-hmm.
which one of the, I'm going to say the only, maybe one of two things. Yeah. The only two things anybody remembers from that movie.
Yeah.
Is I Don't Want Your Life,
mm-hmm.
and Allie Larder in a whipped cream bikini.
Yep.
And I'm a little bit surprised she didn't parlay that into. Apologize.
Someone's going to their final destination.
Yeah. I'm 40 now, so I can say, oh, my ride's here. I'm a little surprised she didn't parlay that into like a more of a, I don't know, romantic comedy career or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, she goes the Katie Holmes route because this was, did you ever see Disturbing Behavior?
Yes.
This
don't really remember much of it, but I know I saw it.
Which has basically Katie Holmes playing this exact same character.
Yes. Yes.
Come be like, well, I don't want to be, I'm coming off of, Dawson's Creek. She needed to play,
like a moody,
Is there a term for, you know how they say like, oh, she's a bottle blonde. And like, oh, yeah, her hair is fake, that kind of thing. Is there a term for fake goth people like that?
Posers.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know.
I like the alliteration. It's most fun. So we get our final sequence where.
They go to France. They go to Paris. France
and, they possibly get killed by a giant sign. They get a second stealth bus, but this bus doesn't get them.
It's not quite stealthy enough because Clear sees it and yells, Alex. And
well, she sees a vision. Or is it a vision?
I don't know.
She sees the bus in a window.
She gets enough of a warning.
Yeah.
That this bus ninja fails.
Yeah.
And then it seems like Carter definitely gets smashed by that sign.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, good. Good note to go out on.
Yeah.
Appropriate note.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to talking about part two because part two might have my favorite of these final sequences. Mm. Final Destination 2 is still one of the top, I want to say, three movie-going experiences of my life.
I am very excited to hear.
I've probably said before, but I will go into in-depth on Patreon. I don't know if you remember... So spoilers for part two.
You've
seen part two, right? Mm. Clear shows up. Clear has somehow survived, and she's basically the Nancy Loomis.
Mm-hmm.
Not Nancy Loomis.
No, the
Nancy from Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yes.
Shows back up, she knows what's going on, gives the information. There's a point where she talks about how Alex died.
Oh.
Do you remember how Alex died?
No.
It's fucking hilarious.
Okay, don't tell me.
Okay.
I want to experience it.
Okay.
Don't tell me.
I won't. I won't. I want to, but I won't. Anyway. Yeah. The only other thing really to mention is the music for this was done by Shirley Walker, who is probably most well known as doing the music for Batman, the Animated Series. Was, I guess, I don't know if I'd call her like an apprentice, but she worked with Danny Elfman. Mm. Like Danny Elfman, she conducted all of the music for Batman. But yeah, that's about it. How do you feel overall about Final Destination? Would you put it on our list?
I'm going to say no.
Mm-hmm.
I hesitated because I do think it has pop culture longevity and like pop culture value.
Yeah.
But I just don't think it's quite good enough to really get on the list.
Yeah. I think I would put it on the list.
Really?
I think this is more of an X Factor movie. Because I think this movie on the list makes more sense than a lot of the movies on the list.
Sure.
Even if this was like 195 or something, I think it is a unique enough idea and has the longevity that I would say I think if this was in the high 100s and you were going through this list and you watched this movie, you would not be disappointed by it.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I personally would put it on there, but I wouldn't be angry if at some point it popped up.
Now, I would put the first 15 minutes of Final Destination 2 in the top 5.
Unfortunately, that is not how this list works.
No.
No.
Nobody knows how this list works.
That's true.
It's a stupid list.
We do not know how it works.
Anyway, that's going to do it for Final Destination. We are going to be rounding out April in our next episode with our first listener request.
with our hostage situation that we've found ourselves in.
And we will be doing Death Becomes Her.
Yes.
Which will be fun. You know, I'd been thinking about it today, not very deeply, but it just occurred to me. For some reason, part of me wants to do like a summer run that's all wild cards.
Ooh.
Just because, like, I feel like there's so many that we would like to do but aren't on the list.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Listener, let us know how you feel about that.
Yeah.
Because there's some things we have to cover to keep in line with the sequels.
Yes.
But we had talked about maybe doing like a mini, like 5-movie Hammer series.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
TBD.
Yeah. We have... This is movie number 144.
Mm-hmm.
So we are not really close to being done with the list.
Mm-mm.
And I feel like there's a lot of good ones on the list we have not watched yet.
Right.
And then, of course, the top 10, which are movies no one has ever seen, that we have to do. I don't know. We'll see.
Let's think about it.
It feels like it's going to be... I always forget how quickly we run through... Like, if I was going to say, we should do a month of wild cards, that's like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And we do this every other week, so it's, you know, doesn't end up being that many movies. But
right.
I don't know. We'll think about it.
Yeah. Let us know. Thoughts, feelings, opinions.
It's just going to be... We're just going to be doing all the Final Destination movies.
No, then I don't want to do it.
No.
Anyway, this is when you usually...
Part 4 is really
end
bad.
End the episode. This is when you usually release
I guess
everyone.
Yeah, you're right. I'll end it now, and then I'll just talk more about the sequels on Patreon. Thank you for listening.
Thank
if you want to help support
listening.
The show, head over to patreon.com/thepenskyfile. Follow us as we get into sequels if you really want to hear all of my thoughts about Final Destination 4 or 5.
And who
or
doesn't?
6.
Who wouldn't want to hear that?
Listen, the only person that cares is me, because I want to just listen to my own voice.
He's got the pipe out.
Yes.
Got the ascot on.
Yes. I do. When you're not here, I do podcasts that's just me talking to a mirror.
We'll let the listeners guess how many of our episodes have been that.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. Thank you, Amanda.
Thanks, Glenn.
We'll see you next time.
Bye, everyone.